podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome back to A Celtic State of Mind. I'm Paul John Dykes. I'm joined today on a Thursday by John Paul Mason. Welcome back, JP. How are you doing?
I might be mourning the loss of an Apple Mac laptop.
There's nothing worse.
Looking over it right now and it's, I think it may have died a death.
You ever seen my laptop? You ever seen the age of my laptop? It's old enough to go and buy alcohol. That's it. It's ancient. It is absolutely ancient.
That one that I'm looking down on right now is it's like 9 years old, probably. Maybe 8 or 9 years old. But I just went to plug it in there and no life.
Wasn't a claim ball.
No.
Nightmare. Listen, there is plenty to discuss today. You know who was just in the studio, JP? Our old friend Stevie Mullen. Old friend Stevie was in. And he was in because we were talking about the St. Roch Centenary game that Axom are assisting and setting up. It's going to be taking place on the 16th of April at James McGrory Park, Celtic Select versus St. Roch's Select. And I have been given, can you imagine this? You imagine the privilege, right? I've been given the task of pulling together the Celtic team. How incredible is that? So I'm pulling together the Celtic team, right, from a list of people that maybe over the years I've done a gig with, or maybe we've interviewed them for the podcast or something like that. And I have to pull together a team. I'm not going to be the manager, of course. We've also to get a manager, but I'm going to be pulling together a team of ex-Celts and a few Celtic-minded celebrities as well. JP, it's going to be good fun. If you were to go and select a few players, give me one or two names that you'd like to see playing in a game like that.
Well, I mean, realistic.
Yeah, realistic, yeah.
Not ones that are going to...
Like Henrik and Lupo.
Aye, I mean, that's... come on now, that's pie in the sky stuff. But, I mean, I guess, from a personal point of view, I'm pretty sure Frank McAvenny would be up for it.
Yeah.
And he's... an absolute hero to me. I did watch him play. Well, he was playing at, the football pitches at, I think it's Scotland Street. I was playing in a game one Sunday and there was like a Old Firm Select game going on and it was like Rangers Celtic, Marvin Andrews playing for Rangers, I think maybe like Charlie Miller, but Celtic had McAvenny playing and he got sent off for shouting abuse at the ref.
Did he?
So bear that in mind if you call him up to your Celtic squad.
I was going to ask Frank. I don't know if he still plays in games like that. I was going to ask Frank. And I've got a whole list. I've been writing a list. You can imagine it. I'm like a bear in a sweetie shop writing this list. But Stevie and I actually met 3 years ago because it was to do it for the centenary, which was 2020, and we know what happened, right? And it was postponed. And to be honest, I didn't think it was ever going to happen. But thankfully, Stevie has shown a bit of resilience and it is definitely going to happen. But I was looking at my old notes in my old notebook and it was a wish list of players that I wanted to play for Celtic, right? And you know the saddest thing about it, at the top, I've got the management team, and the management team we were going to ask was Bertie Auld and Frank McGarvey. Would you believe that? Yeah, so that's on the original list. The first name on the list, Lubo, in brackets, establish the fee. And then it goes on, and McAvenny's in there, and various other players are in there. So hopefully we'll be announcing some players very, very soon. So I was talking to our pal Stevie this morning about the game, about last night. He was there. I'm guessing you were there, unless you were working a gig last night, JP.
No. I kept my diary free for last night. I was back in my seat after a couple of away days at various other, one other away day. I sat over in the Lisbon Lions stand by the away support at the Aberdeen game, and I missed the last home game before that, which was the St Mirren Cup game.
Yeah.
I missed that. So it was good to be back in my in my seat in a very, very cold Celtic Park last night. I mean, for a mid-March game, it was pretty ice cold last night. But
it was pretty drastic, yeah.
Yeah, but we got the job done. And apart from some very weird... I've not seen that tackle back. Have you seen the tackle? The Burnley
the one tackle, that Nielsen's going on about? Yeah, yeah. I have seen it. I mean...
How bad is it on a scale of one to bad?
At the time, I watched the game last night with Lawrence, and at the time, I thought to myself, right, okay, it maybe is a bad challenge, but I think Nielsen is going OTT on his reaction.
No like of it.
Exactly, I know. And there was other things in the game that he's obviously not going to mention that I felt, for example, Devlin takes four bookable offences before he gets a yellow card. Clark and goals injures Maeda to the point where Maeda eventually has to come off. And when you look at that, you think, oh, it was a bit naughty, right? But obviously, Nielsen's not going to pick up on his own players, and he picks up on Burnaby. And I want to talk about Burnaby as well, because I don't know if you've probably not had an opportunity to watch the post-match because you're a busy guy.
No, I did. I listened to it last night. Yeah,
the audio, The halftime comments that were coming in were really getting stuck into Burnaby. They really were. I mean, Ralston as well to a lesser degree, but the two fullbacks were getting it tight at halftime. Which
they were in the ground as well. They were in the ground. Well, around about me, like Pierce, he's now very, very big. Pierce, he's probably taller than me. I've seen him grow from when I first got my season ticket. He sits with his granddad Eddie, and he's now a big guy, do you know? He's not a wee guy anymore. So, I mean, I've known him now for 10 years. It's absolutely frightening. I'm not actually sure what age he is. He's probably in his early 20s or something like that. But he was like, can Kobayashi play left back? Said that to somebody next to him. And then I heard him say that. And I was like, oh, come on. Burnaby hasn't been that bad. But folk were thinking he was going to cost us the game at halftime.
Yeah, the thing, firstly, the Kobayashi suggestion, Lawrence made that, not because he was having a dig at Burnaby in any way, shape or form. This was before the game when we were looking at the bench, JP, and we're saying, right, obviously, if Ralston's a bit rusty, you've got Johnson on the bench, what happens if Burnaby's a bit rusty? And obviously, you've got Hatate, you would rather he wasn't playing left back. I was looking at Kobayashi, I know that he can play on the left side of defence, and I can't see any evidence to suggest that he's actually played left back, because that was something Lawrence was saying last night. He can play left back, fair enough. But I actually felt, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but certainly on the comment section, by the end of the game, Burnaby had turned a lot of the commenters round, and they thought he turned out to have a decent game. Was it the same at the match as well?
I mean, I didn't really get a chance to speak to a lot of people at the end about Burnaby. We were just basically enjoying the fact that we'd won the game, and we're probably all a little bit still starstruck by Haksabanovic's late goal, which was absolutely the top drawer into our side of the ground as well, which was, I mean, I had a great view of it. But Burnaby, I mean, see the guys that, or guys and girls that were commenting on it, was it the same people that had kind of turned the corner on that? Like, it was the same people coming back going, all right, hands up.
They came back in and said, you know, well, the point I made at halftime was that against Rangers in the League Cup final, the similar comments were being made about Maeda. And I felt that Maeda, you know, he played a part, obviously, in our first goal, but I thought Maeda came onto a game in the second half. And then St Mirren at the weekend, wearing that kit behind you, we'll come to that. You know, those comments were actually being made about Jota. But Ange persevered on both occasions with Maeda and then with Jota. And Jota then comes into a very good performance, I felt, in the second half against St Mirren. He seemed really determined. He scores that goal, pulls us back into the game. So when we were sitting at half-time, I was saying, you know, I don't think we've got a like-for-like substitution anyway, but how on earth can we see what Burnaby is capable of if we don't let him play through this, if we don't give him the minutes in his legs, JP? Yeah, I thought he was a bit ropey to begin with, but I started noting down all the good stuff he was doing as well. And there was plenty. There was plenty. And I think over the piece, he's nowhere near being our first choice. Let me put that out there first and foremost. But you need to give him games like last night so that when he is to be called upon, JP, he knows the way that we play. He knows the position of an inverted fullback. He knows the culture of the game, what you can get away with, what you don't get away with, because he's not played a massive amount of minutes for Celtic. So I think it's important to stick by the guy. He's 22 years of age. He's over from Argentina. Massive culture shock for him, and he's still settling in, let's be honest.
I know. I think you're right. I think if you don't give guys like that an opportunity, then he just how many times have we seen players just fade away into the background and they become unsettled, disgruntled, and inexperienced, and they've not got the, like you say, they've not got the minutes, they've not got the pressure as well. I mean, last night was a big game. We were playing the team that are third in the league. We went one goal behind. The team had to show character and determination to get back into it. And he was part of that. He was part of that collective. So that in itself is good for him, that he's faced adversity and overcame it, mm-hmm. I think, if that makes any sense. I don't know if it does, but...
No, it does, yeah. Because I also think there's an effect that a player will get from success, and a team will have that effect. And I say that they get galvanised by it, JP, and I also think in adversity that can be the same. And if you get through it and get your result and you do it as a team, then I think that can build the confidence of a player like Bernabe. I said last night, and I would stick by this, obviously, if Taylor's 100% fit and he's available for the weekend, he comes straight back in. I don't stick with Bernabe.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, that's no disrespect to Bernabe, but I don't think Taylor deserves to be bombed out of the side because of Bernabe's performance last night. And Saturday's a different kettle of fish. You know, the hordes of Tynecastle bearing down upon you is a hell of a lot different to having them, a wee pocket of them in the corner of the stadium. Thankfully, I couldn't hear them from where I was, unlike the Aberdeen fans who I was sitting right next to. And, well, shame on them for the majority of their songbook. It was absolutely abhorrent. Like, I actually saw one of my friends, it was there with his wee boy, and I mentioned it to him when I saw him recently, and said, oh, what about the songs from the Aberdeen fans? And he said, yeah, I had Dexter asking me what they were singing. Dexter's, I don't know, 10, 11 or something like that, you know, and you're just like, geez, oh. So, I think Saturday's a different kettle of fish. Taylor would walk right back into that side, I think.
Same for me. Talking about asking about songs, you brought a wee memory to my mind there, JP, and I'm going to have to do a big, massive name drop here. So, Claxon, 12 minutes in, there is going to be a name drop. The name drop is Danny McGrain. So, I was doing a gig with Danny, right? And it was in a Hibs club, as in a Hibernian club, and I think it was Port Glasgow. We're doing it in there, and obviously we do the Q&A, etc. But there was a break, and in the break, the club had put on this Irish dance school, right? So Danny and I and a few of the other guys were sitting in this wee room to the side, a wee room adjacent to the kind of main hall, having a wee sandwich and a cup of tea, all very civilised, JP, right? And every so often we're looking through the wee hatch, and there's all these dancers, all these Irish dancers and all that, and nice traditional Irish music. And then eventually, as it goes on, we're maybe 20 minutes into the break, 30 minutes, and we're back on for the second half to get the questions from the audience. And the Celtic Symphony comes on, right? And I'm looking at the hatch, and obviously the chorus in the whole room is singing in unison. And there's 13-year-old girls dancing along it, and I'm saying, oh, this really isn't appropriate. It's certainly for Danny McGrain to be in the same room as what's going on here. So I says to the, by the way, listen, I'm just obviously trying to protect Danny, an employee of Celtic, in such a scenario. And I say to the guy organising it, you know, going to tell them to tone that down a wee bit before we come back on the stage. And Danny turns around and goes, what's the problem? I says, it's the song they're singing, you know, the lyrics. He goes, what is it? And I tell him what the lyrics is. And he goes, right, but what does that mean? And I explain the connotation of the Ooh Abbott and the one is singing Samara. And he goes, all right, I wondered what that meant every time I heard it at Celtic Park. That was Danny McGrain, JP. And he had heard it, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of times, and he wasn't quite sure what it meant. So we were trying to protect him from that. But it's a conversation we had last week. And it's a conversation, obviously, we'll have again in relation to what you think is offensive at the football. And I've seen a bit of a fallout from that on social media, as is the way of social media, where people are saying, you know, you're a snowflake. If you don't like the songs, don't come to the games. I don't think it's as simple as that. I really don't. I think, you know, the discussion has to be a wee bit more balanced than that, JP. So fair play for calling out last week as well. There's loads of comments coming in, and I want to talk about some of the individual performances from last night. But you've not even had a chance to speak about St Mirren. And obviously you've got that kit behind you hanging up. What was your thoughts generally over the St Mirren victory?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping in vain to get a ticket for it, but of course they were like gold dust, as everyone knew. I mean, I think we got like 1,400 tickets or something, and that's all fine and well if St Mirren sell the tickets that they said they're going to sell, or had people spent £30 just for those seats to sit empty. Who knows? I still don't understand. A friend of mine who's a St Mirren fan tried to explain the concept behind that scheme to me, and I still don't really get it. So I was unfortunate to see patches of black and white on Sunday morning, you know, knowing that it's only half an hour away from me, if that. And yep. I genuinely even asked a couple of people if I could, if they could use their influence to get me a St Mirren ticket, because obviously I don't think I can just rock up and buy a St Mirren ticket without any previous credentials or whatever, because I did it at Aberdeen last season. I sat in the Richard Donald stand and watched us beat Aberdeen 3-2. Weird experience, and yes, I did kind of fake cheer to their goals. In fact, was that one?
You better watch, JP. People will be saying you're a Dons fan and they'll be hounding you off the Axom. There'll be footage somewhere.
It was when masks were still a thing, so I was masked up, so you couldn't see my smile when Jota scored the the winner. But I didn't get a ticket, and then I was, you know, watched it in the house. But I was a wee bit worried when we went a goal behind, because you just start to think, is it going to be another one of those days in that strip? You're thinking, is this genuinely some sort of voodoo curse on us? We've stepped up so much since then, and the levels that we've got in the game, in the squad, the bench and everything else, it's just far too much. And obviously the sending off has a massive impact on the proceedings. It was the definite sending off, there's no doubt about that. The guy held his hands up, they can't argue about that. Can we argue about whether there was a penalty? As soon as I saw it back, I thought, no, he's fouled him outside the box. I know people are... The thing about VAR is now that everybody wants it punished to within the finite letter of the law. And because there was a foot on the line or something with Kyogo, that's a penalty. I mean, see if that's given against us and we get a red card and a penalty, I would be absolutely raging if that was the case. But... ultimately, we didn't need the penalty, unlike other teams, and we won comfortably in the end. And it was good to right the wrong of September, and give a little bit of redemption to the kit behind me, because I feel like I can wear it now. I was convinced I'd never wear that strip again, because I thought, if we don't wear that again, and in actual fact, they wouldn't have put it past somebody within Celtic's marketing team to have negotiated with St Mirren to get them to wear an alternate kit so that we could wear that, so that we could give ourselves a chance.
Bust the hoodie.
Redeem it, because otherwise it would have been forever associated with... I mean, say we go through the whole season undefeated.
I know.
And then that's our only defeat, and then that's the kit we're wearing. It's like, well, no one's ever going to wear that again.
So, I saw you having a discussion about kits in that kind of vein, and it was that season, obviously, Neil Lennon's final season in charge... Colin Watt calls it the lockdown season or the behind closed door season. And the kits, as nice as they are, you can't really enjoy them. I mean, that lime green kit, I loved it.
Yeah.
But there's no good memories of us wearing it. So to your memory.
We never saw the team wearing it, put it that way, in real life anyway. We saw it on a computer screen, which still, to me, those games, I can't, good or bad, I can't really recall anything about those games. I think I've actually... compartmentalised it in my head and just put it in a little dark room in my head somewhere, because it was associated with all sorts of other negative things going on in our lives at the time, you know, where there was so much else outside of football that was off kilter with what we are used to, you know. But yeah, that lime green one's a belter.
There probably was a highlights package in there somewhere, JP, but no one's going to actually sit through all the games and pick it out. I remember a couple of really good goals against AC Milan away from home that never get shown anymore.
I think. Well, actually, now you mentioned that, I do remember that. Yeah.
Tommy Rogic scored a cracker that night as well. But you don't see them so often because, as you say, we're trying to block that memory out. See the St. Mirren thing, I want to talk to you about this because you and I have spoken about the ticket and the way that, and you've had a discussion with the now Aberdeen CEO.
Yeah.
Around the thinking and the rationale behind not giving Celtic tickets. Now, there's also the big thing, JP, about average revenue per seat, average revenue per fan. So if you're saying to a home fan to buy an extra seat that could be purchased by a Celtic fan, right, what you're actually saying is the average revenue that you would normally generate once a fan is in the ground, be that through buying a juice, a Bovril, a pie, whatever, you know, a program, you're not going to get that. Now, there is that average revenue thing. That should be on the planning documentation of any football club for the season. And you're basically tearing that up and saying, no, we don't want to make any money. We'd rather the empty seat. I find that absurd. I can find no logical business sense in that whatsoever. Now, people will say, you and I have just been selfish Celtic fans. We think we should be getting this, that, and the other. But I honestly don't see the business sense in it. None whatsoever.
Nah, and like, I think Livingston obviously go the full hog to an extreme and getting three stands in a club's home stadium does seem a little bit wild. You know, when you're there and you're just looking around you, and even the stand that Livingston have got isn't full. Do you know, it's crazy. You know, it's absolutely. I mean, somebody said to me last night they brought 28 fans to the recent home game against Celtic. I mean, I find that wild. So I don't know. I don't think, I'm not entirely pro having that much of a swing in terms of percentage and support. But if it was to be something like 50-50, and you were to make it work and you were to fill a ground, I really don't see why that would be a problem and how that would somehow give us some sort of huge advantage. Because like I said, we've played at Livingston before, had three stands and lost 1-0 under Postecoglou. It was one of his 16 defeats in his 100 games. That's an incredible statistic, by the way. Was it 253 goals? Is that right?
It's a brilliant record. I mean, I was looking at the percentages, you know, 74% win rate, and it's right up there with the greatest Celtic managers in the history of the football club. It's unbelievable the record that he's had. We will be looking back on the 100 games, but I think it's also important, JP, to look ahead and think to yourself, well, you know, if this trajectory continues, even if it tapers off a little bit, if it continues, you know, I just think the future is very bright for Celtic fans and the club. We're going to be talking about last night's performance, some of the guys that done well last night. We'll be looking ahead to, as you say, a very different fixture at the weekend. And the club sent us a video this morning, and I've not had a chance to put it out in the socials. I will later on, and it's the launch of the new kit. You and I love the kits and all the rest of it. Before I get onto that, though, you've had a wee chat about the silver one there, the grey one behind you. It came out. I've got to say, sometimes the images you get of the kit, you know, the lighting, etc., you've got to see it. I think you've got to see it in action before you can make a real call on it. I seen you sitting on the Axon Bulletin one time, weren't it? Were you maybe abroad? You had it on?
Yeah, it was Seville, I think.
That's right, yeah. And I was looking at that thinking, oh, it looks much better on, but I still wanted to see it on the park. And then St. Mirren happened, and you automatically look at it and go, right, is it a hoodoo? Is it a jinx? Let's not wear it, et cetera, et cetera. But a club don't want that because you won't sell as many jerseys. And I remember the probably the worst selling jersey, and incidentally, the away one, the black, white, and green one, is one of, if not the greatest selling away kit in Celtic's history, by the way.
Is that right?
They keep selling out of it, aye. But you remember the kind of silver and pink number, which we never ever wore. But I just think the club almost gave up on it. You know, they just thought, right, we're not even going to wear it. There was a thing that if you signed a player, often what you would do is you'd put them in the kit you want to sell, you know, and we didn't even try that, and we just gave up on it. Thankfully,
what a huge faux pas from the club that was. I mean, how much money was wasted. I mean, they obviously, they weren't made to order. They would have all been made, so there's probably a job lot of them sitting somewhere ready to be picked up by an opportunistic Del Boy to sell.
Boxes.
Maybe it'll become a retro thing in 20 years' time or something. I doubt it.
I remember you walking into the toll booth. First time I met you in person, you came to Stirling and we did the very first Axon that you were on. And you were wearing the old 1990s away jersey, which was very controversial at the time. As a young boy, I bought it. I always bought the jersey. Didn't matter what it looked like, but it was a zigzag affair with the people's Ford on it, red, white and blue. And I remember you walked in that day and I thought to myself, right, it was maybe a realisation, JP, that time, you know, something that at the actual time it was released was vilified. And I remember on an official Celtic video, the Celtic Collection, they were asking fans what they thought of the new jersey. And one wee guy said, I think it's bogging. And the Celtic, you know, media team thought it was a good idea to put that out. Oh, we'll sell loads of these. The fans think it's bogging. And you walked in wearing it, and it was completely different 30 years on. You know, there was a retro kind of chic to it. Do you think that'll ever happen to the silver and pink number, to the chevron?
It might well do. I mean, I think these things, when they're not bought en masse, and it will maybe achieve some sort of cult status in terms of. I mean, I've already kind of revisited some of the New Balance tops in my mind. They're starting to become a little bit kind of frighteningly retro. Do you know, when you look back at things like the white New Balance one with the, it was pure white and it had like green in the collar and green in the sleeve. That's a really nice top. But I think at the time it was just sort of came and went. And then again, like other things as well, like the green tartan Nike top. Do you know that one?
Yeah.
With the Magna. That was a nice kit looking back at it, I think.
I remember it well because we wore that the night I got married. It was the 18th of September. It was meant to be the day of independence. And I mentioned that in the book, actually. This isn't a plug, around the fact that, you know, the tartan made an appearance that year as Scotland was going for independence and all this kind of stuff, obviously. But I think that night we're playing in Europe and Scott Brown scored in Wicasso. Remember him? Wicasso scored. So you can imagine trying to watch a game of football on the night of your wedding as well and all this kind of stuff. So, yes, I do remember it well. What is this T-shirt behind me, I hear you ask? This is a friend of Axom. It's Phil, or PG Carletta, who is an artist from Kirkcaldy and Fife. Check him out. He's a good Celtic man. He's played Tuts, yeah.
In the January with Mark Sharp and the Bicycle Thieves.
That's a good night. That's a good lineup. Mm-hmm. He also joined Kyle Faulkner on stage recently at PJ Malloy's. Mm-hmm. Can't remember what song he sang, but check him out on the socials. He's a right good lad, and hopefully we'll work with him in the future as well with some of the live stuff that we're going to be doing. And that's PG Carletta. And it's a cool T-shirt. I love a band T-shirt. I don't wear them, JP, but I love, if I'm dealing with a band, I love to get a wee bit of their merch. Oh, Anthony H. Wilson. What a man. Now, I'm going to bring in some of the comments before we go back to the team lineup from last night. Jungle Lion, always an absolute pleasure to see you involved in the comments. Excellent result last night. Imagine what this team will be like if Andy's here for another 100 games. Now, at first you think to yourself, well, of course he'll be here for another 100 games. Of course he will. But I was looking at something last night, right? I'm going to bring it back up here as well. The amount of Celtic managers, JP, who have actually been at the club for 300 plus games, you would be probably quite surprised that there are very, very few. So obviously Willie Mailey was at the club and he managed more games than anybody else and no one's ever going to beat him because he was a manager for about 43 years. 1,617 games, right? You've then got Jimmy McGrory, who managed 843 games. And then you have the great Jock Stein, who managed 690 games. No one since then has ever managed 300 or more games for Celtic. The closest that you'll ever get so far is Martin O'Neill, who managed 282. Now, what I would need to do is add in Neil Lennon's two spells at the club. So his first spell was 227. He came back and he managed another 110. So Accumulatively, Lenny did manage more. But in a one sitting, if you like, it's very, very rare for that to happen. Now, that got me a wee bit worried when I looked at that, JP.
Football's changed, doesn't it?
Mm.
Football's changed, and I mean, it seems incessant at the moment how many people are willing Ange Postecoglou to leave Celtic. I mean, they might not wear their colours, you know, directly to the mast. They might or stick their colours directly to the mast, whatever. But they allude to it. It's always tinged with he's been brilliant for Celtic, and you know, long may that continue. But yeah, I'm sure he wanted to test himself elsewhere, and this, that, and the next thing. And it's quite wild actually to see how it's happening on a daily basis. And I've kind of switched myself off from it. If I see anything, any sort of site that comes up in my Twitter that is punting these stories, mute. See you later. I just don't want to see it. If you're trying to get traction for that kind of stuff, then I'm not interested.
No. I remember having a chat. You remember the rumours around Benitez coming to Celtic as a manager?
Mm-hmm.
And I was chatting away to, it was Paddy McCourt, actually. There's your second name drop of the afternoon. That's it clanging at 30 minutes. And Paddy said to me that a manager like Rafa will go to a club if he thinks he can attain European success at that club. So you ask yourself the question, can Celtic attain European success? But what does European success look like, JP? You know, that would be my answer to that. So, well, we need
to win a knockout tie, because that seems to be one of the only things that a certain other club has over us. And it's rammed down our throats on a weekly, daily basis that we haven't won a knockout tie since, what, 2004 or something like that. So that in itself would be like, well, in their vernacular, it would be like winning a trophy, wouldn't it? It'd be like one of those invisible trophies that they lift every couple of days.
Yeah.
We scored one
goal more than you last night.
Yeah. Something like that. But we need to do that. We need to reestablish ourselves as a team that appear in the later stages of a European competition, because mm-hmm. we've not been there or thereabouts for so long. We always get to, well, not always, but if we have, we've always fallen at those hurdles like Valencia, Copenhagen, Zenit St. Petersburg.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those three clubs, Bodo Glimt, we should be getting past those teams. And with a side like we've got now, you'd like to think that is a far more achievable prospect than it was before, you know?
I think so. I'm now going to further that train of thought, JP, by asking the question, how many, because we keep hearing about the English League and all that, and I'm of the same view as yourself. I just think people need to put a sock in it. I think Ange has answered the question. People weren't happy with the way he answered it. He answered it again, you know, and that's happened all in the last few weeks, linked with every job under the sun down south. English football, right, obviously has designs on itself. How many clubs in that league? Here's a question for you. I think you're a bigger English football fan than I. How many clubs in that league do you think realistically could win a European trophy? So there's three European trophies up for grabs. How many of those clubs do you think are at that level where they could win a European trophy? It's a handful, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, you say I'm a bigger fan of English football. I certainly wasn't a fan of English football last weekend, that's for sure. I avoided all things Anfield and the rest, but that was a horror show. But I've not even seen any of the highlights, and I don't think I ever will. Highlights, I mean, but I think Chelsea, obviously, with their spending power, and if they get their act together as a team, they always seem to do well in Europe. They always have done. I remember them winning the Cup Winners' Cup. That was before, I think that was before Abramovich even came in.
Jody Morris played in that game.
Yeah, Viale and all that. So Chelsea do tend to get into the latter stages. So I would have said that there's a likelihood of them getting a team at the right time in that competition and maybe getting another one. I remember the first time they won it, I kind of thought football was broken a little bit because it's like Chelsea winning the European Cup. It was just, it didn't, something didn't feel right about it. It would be exactly the same if Man City ever win it. I don't think I could cope with that at all, because that's a serious case of, right, well, show me the receipt then, because that's it absolutely is. I think, unfortunately, Manchester United are a million miles away from, certainly from Champions League victories again. I think they've got a good chance of Europa League maybe this season. And Liverpool are a weird team. They can pull something out of the bag as well. But again, they seem to maybe be kind of trailing off a little bit in terms of this current side. But I don't think any of them are nailed on. I mean, they always seem to fall at the last hurdle, and I'm so glad that Man City are included in that. When they kind of got their proverbial handed to them of Real Madrid. Was it Real Madrid or PSG that came back and absolutely... It was Real Madrid, wasn't it? Real Madrid came back out of nowhere. It just came back from a couple of goals down or something and put them out. So I think in terms of ambitions in Europe, Ange Postecoglou's got all the ingredients at Celtic to do what he wants to do. And I think he wants that. I mean, I don't know if I said this last week, but I genuinely think he's got designs on being able to leave here as one of the greatest managers that we've ever had. I know that sounds outlandish to say that, but the more you hear from him and the more you see the relentlessness in this team and the way that he goes about his business, I do actually think he wants to walk away from Celtic with the biggest ever mic drop ever. Do you know what I mean? Like, contrast his arrival to his departure, and that's what I think he wants to do.
Yeah. And you named four English clubs, right? You've maybe got Arsenal fans and Spurs fans who would try and throw their hat in the ring, right? But what we're talking here is a handful of clubs, half a dozen max, who might actually win a European trophy, right? Now, the names that you've mentioned, and you throw the two London clubs on top of it, are they going to appoint Ange Postecoglou as the manager of the football club? All you have to do is go to the kind of history books and say, when was the last time a manager went for Scottish football down to this division? Where did he go? So let's use Brendan Rodgers. He went to Leicester. Steven Gerrard went to Villa. It's not going to happen. So this mad habit that the media has of saying Ange Postecoglou is going to be the next Everton manager, Southampton manager, etc., you know, fade to silence. It's going to continue and continue. It's not going to happen. There's no way Ange is going to go down south, JP, right, to batter around that middle kind of end of the league where your stock drops so rapidly that you get the sack within a season, two seasons. You know, you just need to look at the average time that a manager has at a club down there. When he can build, like you say, something special at this football club. And we're on the, I think we really are at the very beginnings of a great period of success with Celtic. Someone corrected me yesterday, say we're in the middle of a great period of success. They only won one league. I get that. But it's almost as if there's been a restart, a refresh, a different philosophy, a different approach to how we're doing, and a different style on the part, JP. And I think that that could continue. And I do harbour a kind of ambition, a view, a dream of Ange remaining at Celtic even when he's not a manager. Now, people might think that's mad and he's got other ambitions here, there, or ever. I've never heard them talking about ambitions away from Celtic since he came here. So I'm going to stick by what Ange Postecoglou tells us. And like you say, progression next season would be exactly what you said in terms of Europe. Could Celtic get into a European final? Yes, of course they could. They absolutely could. It's been proven that a Scottish team can do it. Could they win it? Well, anything's possible once you get there. So I don't think that that's being, you know, too, for me, fantasist. I don't think I'm being a fantasist by saying that. I think that, you know, if you make that progression season on season, transfer window by transfer window, then you can get there. But I don't think for a moment he's going to be leaving in the dead of night, a la Mr. Rodgers, who I've already mentioned. Jake comes in, apart from a poor miss, Haksabanovic. Let's talk about Haksabanovic. It was electric in the cup final. showed his class last night, start him on Saturday. Right. Haksabanovic did have a brilliant chance in the cup final. I wish he had put it away. We've been singing his praises on here. He came on last night, like you say, what an absolutely tremendous finish. Maybe through an injury to Maeda, maybe through a wee bit of a up and down form of Abada, he could well start this weekend. Would you start him?
I certainly wouldn't be against it. I think last night when I saw the starting lineup and I saw that Burnaby and Ralston were in, it was a definite kind of deep intake of breath, because you just think, wow, we're playing Hearts, third best team in the league, and he's changed the two fullbacks. No Hatate, Abada coming in. The thing you always go back to is you just think, well, when has this guy really let us down in terms of what he's decided to do with the team? Those guys aren't getting in because he feels sorry for them. They must have been shown it in training to be given the opportunity to come in and start, and they hadn't played for a while. So Haksabanovic has been knocking on the door. I don't think you could just say, oh, because he scored a wonder goal last night that he should start. I mean, it should be based around everything else that the guy that left the comment there mentioned about his cup final contribution, his general all-round play. Like, he's got assists in him, he's strong, he's tenacious, he wears a long-sleeve strip, which is something that I think... See, if you wear a long-sleeve strip and you've got someone about you, it's just... It's like Lubo all over again. I'm not saying he's like Lubo, but if you've got a long sleeve strip on, I don't know, there's something quite gallus about someone who wears a long sleeve strip. And Haksabanovic reminds me of like a guy in your school that was like really good when you're playing in the playground. You know, like one of these guys that's just like a playground superstar and probably ended up going out and getting into, smoking and drinking and all the rest of it, all the late night West Lothian endeavours that you could get up to back then. But
yeah,
but he's got that kind of, looks like he's playing in like street football or something like that. I actually could name you the guy that I'm thinking of from my school. His name was John Connolly, and he was brilliant at football. I never came to anything as far as I know. I don't know if he ever went to play on at any level, but at our school, he had all the tricks. He had that kind of low centre of gravity that he could drop his shoulder. He had every trick in the book. And I think he was two-footed as well, if I remember rightly. So whatever became of him, I don't know. I actually met a guy at the Martin O'Neill night when I was up the stairs before. I don't know if I told you this, but we were chatting away and it transpired that we're like, wait a minute, are you for Livingston? You from Bathgate, yeah? And I'm like, what school did you go to? St. Kent's. And then he's like, all right. He's like, do you know such and such? They went, wait, what age are you? And I said, my age. And he said, the same age. And I went, what's your name? And he went, Stephen Fairley. And I went, no way, man. The guy I went to school with. As soon as he said his name, I honed in the face. And he'd obviously changed a lot since school. He'd grown. He was a lot taller. But I saw the face, and bear in mind I hadn't seen him since he left in fourth year, so I hadn't seen him since 1995. And I'm meeting him at your night at the thing, and he'd seen me on this and not put two and two together that it was me for school or whatever. So it was really, really great to catch up with him and talk Celtic, introduce me to his boy as well and all that.
Oh, it's incredible.
Told me he met Ange out shopping in Edinburgh right quite near the start of his tenure,
right?
And he was waxing lyrical to him about the European games or something like that, and Ange said something to him like, oh, we're not anywhere near what I want us to be yet, we're just getting started. I was like, hairs in the back of my neck when he said that. I was like, oh my god, that's brilliant.
Yeah,
so there you go.
And that's why, JP, I'm sticking to what Ange tells us. I mean, we've no reason to disbelieve him, right? Absolutely no reason to disbelieve him. So all the media hype around get Ange out of Celtic and all this stuff, because obviously there is a narrative. I'm listening to what Ange talks when he's speaking to the fans. You look at what it means to him when we won that trophy against Rangers. And I just think that, you know, there can be a narrative, and unfortunately a lot of people believe it. They believe it because it's written down. I'm going to get to that in a wee second as well, because we made a comment the other day there about how We are going on this period, I believe, under Ange Postecoglou, of utter domination. And a big part of that is going to be what happens elsewhere, or what can't happen elsewhere, due to a lack of finance, due to a lack of assets, the fact that they've already had a warning strike in terms of financial fair play, and the circumstances around that versus the circumstances as to where we are with the money in the bank, the assets on the park, a manager with a strategy, a recruitment policy which is working wonders. And, you know, that versus us equals 10 in a row, you know. And that people don't want to believe it, JP, but I think there is a panic setting, and I think there's some fans looking at it, Rangers fans who unfurled banners the other week, who realise that, you know what, you can maybe go on a run, I think, of whatever amount of games it is, 12 or 13 games, and think that you're doing okay. Well, okay is no good enough, because second in Glasgow is nothing. You know, it was Bill Shankly, second in Liverpool is nothing, and it's true. And I think that we're just, that gap is just going to widen and widen. And people say, well, it's only 9 points. You know, some out there actually would have you believe that Rangers can still win the league. No, they can't. No, they won't. Mathematically, are possible, yeah, but it's not going to happen. Open your eyes. Celtic are vastly superior. And you look at on the bench, and this isn't me being entitled or any of these kind of things, pompous. It's just, that's the true facts of it, JP. And it's fine if they don't want to believe it, because what happens is we go about our business anyway, and we continue to improve and progress and develop the players that we've got in the squad already. And it really just echoes what Jungle Lion says. They have no money and no assets. Exactly. How are they going to do this rebuild in the summer when a dozen players leave out of contract and the club gets no money from them? They're not going to be able to do it. It's as simple as that. And you can actually hear the noises coming out of the football club from Michael Beale in particular, where he's telling the fans that we don't have the money, we don't have a magic wand, and Celtic do have all these things. So I think glorious times ahead, and who else to be in charge of that than Ange Postecoglou? I can't think of anyone. We love our jerseys, JP. You have an array of Celtic jerseys and other jerseys hanging from that shelving system behind you on a weekly basis. Ridiculizer says the tagline for the new kits should be betraying our origins. Does it come in fleece? See what you did there? Does it come in fleece? Now, you've seen the jersey. You would have seen the leaked images and then Adidas's official images, and then the club released their official images, and they're all over the socials and online this morning. They sent us the wee video. Did you see the video?
I saw some sort of GIF thing on Twitter, just of it. In various different shots of it. I don't know if that's the same video. It must be. Is it Matt O'Reilly that's in the video? Or?
Let's have a look. I've not had a chance to play it. So this is at this point that the club could actually pull the rug from under my feet, because I've not seen it. But they did send it this morning. I thought I'd have a wee look at it on the show. So I'm going to play it just now and we'll see what it looks like. Let's have a look. If it works, here we go. I like it. It's nice. My problem is we don't need a fourth kit.
Yeah,
that's my argument, you know. And
that's mine too.
You know, I do like the trims. I do like going back to all the origins, our Irish roots, our heritage. That much, you know, means a lot to me as a Celtic supporter, JP. But what also means a lot to me is the fact that the vast majority of the fans, the vast majority of people that have got a season ticket are working class. And it's never been tougher for the working classes and generations than it is right now, where the few are looking after the few. You know, the political side of this country is shambolic at the moment, and the many are basically just getting thrown to the wolves and having to fend for themselves, be that, you know, energy prices, the cost of living crisis, fuel crisis, you know, the whole thing. I was watching a very, very interesting interview between Bernie Sanders and Frankie Boyle the other day. Watch it. It's on YouTube. Brilliant. It's about an hour and a half long. And they're talking about the capitalism. Obviously, Bernie's giving it the US kind of side of view, and Frankie's chipping in with the UK kind of angle. And their similarities are unbelievable. And what Bernie Sanders is saying is, do not let the NHS go private. Do not let it happen. Because what's going to happen is, and he gave you a very, very bleak view of what working class life's going to be like if you get ill. you know, because he's seeing it over in America. And all these things are relevant. I'm not going off on a tangent. All these things are relevant. This is real. People are struggling in great, great numbers, JP. And I don't think that a fourth kit to celebrate St. Paddy's Day is, for me, I don't think it's appropriate.
Before I talk about that, just picking up on something you said there about America and private healthcare and everything else. And Stuart, you have read Stuart Braithwaite's book, obviously, ahead of doing the interview with him. Do you remember him talking about when Martin, the drummer, had to get medical help because his pacemaker came out?
His heart condition, yeah, yeah.
Right, and they got charged $30,000 for the medical bill for his treatment, or had the advice that was given to him was $30,000.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe, I mean, I knew that it was a bit crazy over there in terms of that, those type of things, and that's what can lead to people ending up in poverty because they can't afford medical bills. And
yeah, bankruptcy, losing your house.
Yeah.
This is the working classes.
Yeah, totally. But then, yeah, to touch on the strip, I just don't understand why we're releasing a fourth kit in March. We've got 10 games to go. I mean, that's just, why? Like, what is the rationale behind that? I know you, people will go, oh, you don't need to buy it if you don't want to. Like, even if that was my favourite strip of all time, say they'd released a strip that straight away became my favourite, I'd be like, I'd still have issue with it because it's an expensive piece of kit. Yes, okay, it's limited edition or whatever it is, but I just don't understand. I don't understand the rationale behind it. It seems a little bit of a cash grab on behalf of, it almost seems like, you know, when a band are on an album deal and they've got to release a certain amount of albums in a certain period of time, and then they just throw something out, some cover and B-sides or whatever. That's what this feels like, an unnecessary release.
Absolutely.
Why it couldn't have been kept for next season or something, you know, I just don't, without going into the detail of the strip itself, because that's another issue, I love the fact that when people go, well, what have Celtic got to do with Ireland? Well, let me sit you down and tell you, like, there's ignorant people in Scotland that will dismiss Celtic's Irish heritage and say that we're clinging on to something that's got nothing to do with us or whatever. And it's like, well, no, if you actually want to learn the history of the club, then here's a book. Come back to me in a couple of days and then tell me if you think differently. But I just think the actual release itself, I just don't understand it. And I know we gave that the other mob pelters when we heard they were releasing a fourth kit, and that was in January. Or
what was it, the AC/DC one? That one?
Oh, not that one. No. That's disappeared without a trace. And I've not seen hide nor hair of anybody wearing any of that gear, which is no real surprise, because it was absolutely bogging. But this kit nonsense is. I think the Adidas kits have been great. By and large, they've all been great. I've got most of them. I don't think I'll be getting this one though, and I don't like saying that because obviously I support the club, I have a season ticket, I buy merch, I've got tracky tops, all the rest of it, but this is a strip too far for me, I think.
No, you're right, and that is the argument, because we got that on the Facebook, I think, after it was mentioned the other day, or I posted a picture in the Facebook comments. Some comments were, listen, you're not obliged to buy it, but let's remember, supporting a football club is different from having a favourite clothing brand or a favourite fast food joint, where you can say you don't have to buy a product from that company, even though you like it. Supporting a football team is completely different, JP, and particularly when you've got kids.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, no, it doesn't really work like that. And I think you do have a say in it. Listen, we could go on about the fact that as a season ticket holder this season, what have I had to do to watch the games for not being there so I can broadcast on a match day? How many packages do I need to have? Last night, I've got a subscription to Celtic TV, but I still had to pay a tenner. I got, I think, a couple of quid off for being a subscriber or a season ticket holder, one or the other, to watch the game so I could cover it on here. The Viaplay, the BT Sport, the Sky Sport, the whole shebang. So you're getting fleeced at every single opportunity by the club. And I just think that sometimes, let's not always go on about the... I mean, the commenter went in studs up there, but I can totally see what he meant. And the club might be, whether they're bothered or not, that we're sitting here saying it's not something. We're not saying don't buy the jersey. We're not saying that.
No, it's everybody's choice.
It's not a boycott.
No, it's absolutely. I think it will sell well because obviously it's been designed to appeal to Celtic fans and to Celtic fans who absolutely identify with the Irish heritage of the club. But I just think the actual principle of the jersey itself, whether it was... I think if you're going to release something like this at this stage in the season for that price, there has to be a different angle to it other than just, oh, well, it's a tribute to our Irish heritage. Yeah. I think if there was a charity aspect to it, I think there would maybe be a lot bigger a buy-in to it, maybe even from myself, because if you think you're giving 50% of your fee or whatever, not fee, but 50% of the price of it going to some sort of charity that was maybe to do with the local area, you know, whether it was in association with the foundation or something like that, that angle would maybe appeal to me to persuade me to buy it. But just to be going to shell out another £70 on a football strip is seems a little bit wayward to me at this point in the season as well. And somebody said, oh, well, is this so we can play Hibs and wear the kit against Hibs? And you're like, can you release a strip just to play one game? Surely not.
I had a few people in here. We were doing a wee deep dive into football kit collections. You know, I thought I was into it until I started meeting some guys who've got collections of 300 and 400 jerseys and all that. And some of the most sought after kits are limited edition one off kits. And I think that's maybe the angle. I don't know if this is a limited edition, but they become sought after worldwide and it will sell out. So the club might come back to you and say, but look, it's sold out. Sometimes there's the right thing to do business-wise and there's just the right thing to do. And I think that's what it comes down to. It will sell well. It's got a Celtic crest on it. It's official. We know
by
that.
By the way, if they've missed a trick. I'm not saying I'm some sort of soothsayer or idea guru or anything like that. Far from it. I would be in a far bigger flat than this and a far bigger house than this if I was. But the charity angle... That could have been looked at, given what the club was founded for and the whole fact that it's to recognise our Irish history, our Irish heritage, that could have been something that they thought about. And I don't know if that was ever on the table at any point from anybody within the club. But
the big thing as well, we know that the club does phenomenal work for charity. We get that and we try to be as balanced as we can. I mean, the recent announcement where the, you know, twice a week you've got the drop in, people can go and bite to eat, hot drink, phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. So they're embracing the fact that communities are struggling, JP, at working class level. People are struggling to pay their bills. They're struggling. They're doubting whether or not they should put on the heating. In 2023, in a first world country, we're working... I know whatever, 40, 50, 60 hours a week, and we can't put the heating on.
I know people that are doing that, 100%. Yeah. Definitely know people are doing that. And the foundation as well, that just the last week or this week, announced that night at Armadillo with, or is it the Hydro? Is it the Hydro? It's got Hydro. So that's them using something that they've got the power to do to then raise money for the foundation. That's, you know, and people will go to that event and will gladly pay the money. Well, one, to give Scott Brown the send-off that he deserved, because it, as he said in the interview for it, to leave the way he did was kind of heartbreaking. And those pictures that were taken of him sitting in the middle of the park, an empty Celtic Park, pretty haunting, really, when you contrast that with the amount of success that the guy enjoyed. So I think that's a pretty... great thing to happen for him and for the fans. But that was an angle. They're using that as an opportunity to make money, and I don't see why they couldn't have used this as an opportunity to make money for the charity as well, rather than it be seen to be as cynical as this. And then that's how I view it. I mean, there's no point in me. And I gave my views last week on the song, the ABBA song, and that was my opinion. This is my opinion. You've not told me to say anything. Nobody else has told me to say anything. I don't want to work for Sky. I'm not about to eat a big bowl of soup.
I love all that. Hey, I'm just looking to get a job on the mainstream and all this nonsense. By the way, we love football jerseys. We love Celtic jerseys to such a degree. It took me 7 years to write that book above it there. But that's not right.
Now they've gone and added
they've ruined it. That's why I'm angry about this. That's the truth. They've ruined it. I'm going to have to write another page. Deary me. Right. Thanks, everyone, for getting involved. JP and I can often go on tangents, but sometimes it really is important to point out sometimes that big businesses can get so commercially minded that they lose sight of other things. But, you know, the caveat to that is the club does brilliant work for charity and we take all that into account. Aidan Barrett. Awata, McGregor and Hatate should start on Saturday, in my opinion. I can't see Ange making massive changes, but I'll tell you, every time I've seen Awata, I think he looks the real deal, JP.
Yeah, I think he's growing into the club and growing into the side, becoming more familiar with his teammates. And I think I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do going forward, because this is just the bedding in stage, isn't it? I mean, this is just a time when you've seen it happen with lots of players where they need that 6 months to maybe even a year to sort of establish themselves. And this is when people make judgments so early in players, and there's maybe people who have made judgments on Iwata already that maybe don't think he's good enough. Or, I mean, certainly there's probably a lot of people that don't think Burnaby is good enough. Mm. And you want these guys to continue to get involved in the side and give. I love seeing players flourish when they've been written off. I'm not saying Iwata has been written off, of course he's not, but there is a kind of tendency to go, well, where is he going to fit in this midfield? Because there's so many good players in that midfield who currently have that jersey. Like Turnbull, can he get in? Mm-hmm. I mean, Turnbull's nowhere near the side at the moment, and he'd come in, scored a couple of goals, looked like he was maybe going to dislodge somebody. Can't now. And I don't think there's any chance that Moy won't play on Saturday. I think Moy will play on Saturday. I think 100% he'll play. I think Hatate and McGregor will play as well in that midfield on Saturday, because this is... Ange will be treating this like a cup final.
Yes.
It's a one-off game. And the prize is the next round. My Mac has just come back to life, by the way, for anyone concerned over the health of my MacBook.
It was playing on my mind. It was playing on my mind.
It's just pinged to life and the lights come on, so I'm kind of relieved about that. But I think the strongest team possible on Saturday. I don't think there's any room for... I think last night was the game where you could get away with Burnaby and Ralston at fullback. Saturday is the game where you play your full strength side, because you don't want to give... They went 1-0 up last night and probably people were like, uh-oh, this could be a night where we drop points. You don't want to give them anything at all on Saturday. Certainly not a team with Andy Halliday playing in them, you know what I mean? It's like...
I know, because if it is tight, you then start, and thankfully we went virtually the whole show, if not the whole show, without talking about it. There is that opportunity for a decision not to go your way when it should, and I think that is in the back of your mind when things are tight. So you're right, you go in, you play your strongest team. Some of us will have different opinions as to what that strongest side will be. I've got to thank everybody for their opinions today. It's all about opinions on a Celtic state of mind, as this JP says. And if you listen to Lawrence and I last night, we disagree all the time. JP is talking his own truth. It's nothing to do with a narrative that's fed by me or anybody else. But it's always an absolute pleasure to see some of your names popping up on the comments section. As I say, check out PG Carletta if you want to come along and see Axom live. We're with Alan Thompson next month. The Danny McGrain one is sold out, but the tickets are available for Tomo, the boy from Seville, underneath the video. Thanks everybody for getting involved in the comments. All that's left for me to say once again, JP Mason. By the way, we've got a special guest on tomorrow's show. I'm not going to reveal who that is yet. John Paul Mason, thank you for joining.
We've got Orlando Weeks at King Tut's tonight. So if anybody likes the Maccabees, he's a singer for the Maccabees. He's playing Tut's tonight. Tickets available.
On the door.
Ah, yeah. Yeah.
Aye, on the door. Nice one. So come along to King Tut's and tomorrow. Come back to Axon and see who the special guest is, an ex-player who may or may not be playing in the St. Rocks centenary game. We haven't asked them yet, but if he wants to play, he'll definitely get a game. Thank you, JP Mason, for joining me on A Celtic State of Mind.
Cheers, Paul.
Network.